and welcome to another episode of Sacred Cinema here on 2XX 98.3 FM People Powered Radio. I'm your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, for the next half hour, and this week's episode is entitled Vengeful Street Fighters. Talking about vengeance, vengeful street fighters. Let me break that down for you, dear listener. Well, vengeful, we all know what the word vengeful means. People who are trying to avenge themselves or someone they love, that sort of thing. So we're in the world of revenge tragedies, which is a very kind of typical, I guess, plot type, the type of story, I should say, that the tragic avenger is certainly an archetype, particularly in Western literature. You've got things like Medea, more recently you've got Tarantino doing things like Kill Bill, certainly in that territory. But we're specifically focusing on, I've called them street fighters, and it's kind of interesting there isn't like a specific name for this kind of guy, because it is interesting as we talk about it through this week's episode, it does sort of change in each film sort of who this guy is, and maybe a hitman, generally someone who's kind of gets suited up and looks kind of cool and punches guys, maybe uses a gun here and there, but kind of works his way up the kind of the corporate ladder, so to speak. There's a bit of James Bondness to it in all these films, I suppose. We see a lot of hitmen and that kind of thing. We talked about this a little bit when we did David Fincher's film The Killer. I think that could definitely fit into this week's episode as well. Kind of, and we talked about that film, emphasized this interconnectedness in the 21st century of corporatism and these very long hierarchies of elites and climbing up that ladder in that film. We're very much going to get into that territory this week as well. What are the three films we're going to talk about? Well, there's two big ones that I absolutely love, and there's one I'm kind of okay about, but I'm conscious we probably should get stuck in pretty quick, because two of them as some mammoths. The first one's Park Chan-wook's 2003 film Old Boy. I'm not going to do the other one. And then we're going to move on to Chad Stahelski and David Leitch's 2014 film John Wick, starring Keanu Reeves. And then we're going to finish off talking about Dev Patel's debut feature, Monkey Man, that just came out in cinemas. And can I tell you this? I was blown away by Monkey Man. I'll get into it in a second, but I'm so frustrated by some of the... it should be getting more heat. I just thought it was so good. But let's get started with our first film, which is Park Chan-wook's 2003 film, Old Boy. So this is an absolute classic. We've got the character of Dae-soo. He's kidnapped and locked in a room for 15 years. And then when he's randomly let out, he's not really sure why he's suddenly been let out for 15 years. He's kind of stalked by his ex-captor and kind of coaxed into sort of unraveling the mystery, so to speak. And in doing so, he meets this girl, and, you know, it's a very, very complicated film. I've seen it a couple of times, and there's like still things that are like a little bit, I think I get all of it now, but like, there's a lot to it. I want to talk about it in how it depicts kind of the profound aftermath of past misdeeds. And I'm using the word aftermath very specifically. You could use the word consequences, you could use the word impact. I think this film is very careful in how it depicts what happens after you do something wrong. And the word impact doesn't quite get to it. It's just sort of how the world is different after you've done something wrong. So, you know, in talking about this film as a revenge tragedy, it's a classic revenge tragedy film, we have a very important backstory here, and it's really interesting opening up this with conversation about revenge tragedies. The character of Dae-soo has a very checkered backstory. So on one hand, you know, he's been locked up. So in very basic terms, it's a revenge tragedy in that he's locked into this prison cell, and that's why he's avenging himself because he was locked up. And we could sort of reduce the film down to it being, at least in the first half of the film, building on some of the themes we've talked about recently about missing people and kidnaps. It's a depiction of the human experience of living in a state of limited knowledge and resources and limited power without any understanding of why we've been given this fate. It's kind of got this existential bent to it. But the film is so much bigger than that. You could say this film has those elements, but I don't think that's the focus of this film. Because on the other hand, there was a reason why Dae-soo gets locked up. And we could almost say that the cause of his vengeance turns out to be an act of revenge in and of itself as the story unfolds. So he's in there for a reason, and the person that's put him in there is almost has their own revenge story that they're acting out. And it's interesting that you could make two, there's two versions of this film that could exist from either perspective. And it is a great film to watch more than once because you see the characters in different lights depending on sort of when you're watching and what you know when you're watching certain things. So how is this film like a mystery at all? Why isn't it not over in 5 minutes, right? Because presumably he's done something wrong and that's the reason he's locked up. Doesn't he know that? Doesn't he just say, I know who did this. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. Well, the film is really interesting in how it explores this idea of hypnotism. Now, we often talk about things like hypnotism on this show in the context of things like hegemonic power and ideology and social conditioning and that kind of cabinet of Dr. Caligari kind of way, which is, you know, we talk about like hypnotism or society being sort of subtly brainwashed into believing, you know, Shutter Island, that those kind of films of that kind of psychological thrillers where you're kind of like, what are they? And this film has that element to it as well, but the film is so unique in how it aligns this idea of hypnosis or hypnotherapy with, it kind of aligns it with or lies it down right next to just a basic form of forgetfulness. And there's a really important scene at the very beginning of the film where he sits down and because he's bored in his cell, he writes down all the bad things he's done in his life. And there's the line he says is, I always thought I was a pretty boring person until I started writing all the things I've done wrong. And I realized that I've actually had a pretty eventful life and done lots of things. And that is kind of, I think, that's almost the thematic core of the film, or at least it underpins so much what this film is really getting at, I think, at least in my interpretation. And I think it's kind of saying something like it's not so much that we suppress or push our past demons away, our past baggage away. It's kind of worse than that. We're actually, human beings are kind of susceptible to just letting the things we've done in the past that are bad, letting them just float away on their own. Like, we don't even have to try to get rid of the things that we've done in the past that are wrong. And the film puts us in a very particular setting that really helps us see that in our own lives. The film is called Old Boy because he's an old boy of a high school. And if you think about your high school days, and the whole thing is sort of centered on a high school drama, and you think about your own experiences of high school and how your bullies would kind of think about the things that they did to you when you were that, you know, I think about things that bullies did to me, they wouldn't remember that they did those things. They just, it's just a human experience. When you're young, you just separate yourself. You don't even have to try. It's not even out of guilt or shame or regret. That those sometimes bad misdeeds of the past go away. And if you don't really believe me, stop thinking about times you were bullied. Think about people you bullied yourself. And I think this film is kind of saying that if you don't have an ability to think about the things that you did to others, because you must have been mean to someone at some point, if you can't think about that, you can't remember, that's the problem. The fact that we do terrible things to each other and just forget that we've done them. And they still sit there and they have ramifications. And the film packs a really big punch here because it's not just saying that those misperceptions hurt other people. That misperception of your past or that misperception of reality in the form of forgetfulness, let's say, it doesn't just hurt the original victim. That misperception of our past, our forgetfulness, you might say, becomes a pretty, like, I'm almost sort of choking up thinking about it when I think about the film, because that becomes a cause of Desu's own destruction and the destruction of someone that he cares about a lot. And that sounds like a very, very trite and obvious thing to say, but the film is, and this is why we watch films rather than just talk about them, the film is so powerful, anyone that's seen the film, is so powerful in its depiction of that idea. And I feel like it brings about a very sort of strange kind of intense tenderness in its depiction of who the ultimate victim of this film is. It's a weird line to draw, but if you compare it to the Jenna Malone's character in Donnie Darko, which we've talked about on the show before, some films are just so good at distilling a very specific kind of tragedy where we have a purely innocent person who has done nothing to, you know, nothing to bring about their own demise. They're virtuous, or they're loyal, and they simply are just a victim of circumstance. And there's a singular character that finds himself in that setting and that puts the burden on themselves to rectify reality, to make sure that that isn't the case. And I think Donnie Darko is a little bit more optimistic than Old Boy, but there's a very distinct kind of tender tragedy, I think, where you just think about a person, it's like they have done absolutely nothing wrong to suffer through that. And very often, maybe we don't spend enough time with them to think about you know, for them to sort of, it's often the case that these things sort of hit them out of left field. It's not like they have time to process that they're going through tragedy. It's sort of an out of left field kind of tragedy. But you have to watch the film, I think, to fully experience that. But in talking about Oldboy, you know, it seems that we're putting a lot of blame on Oldboy himself, Daisu, on the Avenger from the get-go this week, right? Are we victim blaming a little bit? Is it always like this? Is it always the Avenger that we focus by the end of the film, go like, you know, you deserved this, man? Well, let's move into our next film for today's discussion. Before we do, just remind you, while listening to 2XX 98.3 FM People Powered Radio, I'm your host Jimmy Bernasconi for the remainder of this half hour slot, and be sure to stay tuned for more quality radio content here on 2XX and jump onto our website to consider subscribing to the station or sponsoring the show. But let's move on now to Chad Stahelski and David Leitch's film from 2014, huge action film of the 2010s, John Wick, starring Keanu Reeves. And if you haven't seen it, you've got Keanu Reeves there, who's an ex-hitman who pretty much goes after the guys who killed his dog that his dead wife gave him. So you can probably guess where we're going with this just from that brief synopsis, which is that this film is certainly playing to revenge being something that's justified by this kind of natural right to redemption. That we're in a world of, well, I'll get into it in a second, but it's almost like revenge is something that is almost innate in the human being's psyche. Because we have a right to redemption when something, when an injustice is felt by an innocent party. So I think this film kind of starts off from where Oldboy finished in a lot of ways. That there's a line in Oldboy where, you know, we're talking about how much the Daisu character is kind of depicted as not that actual great a guy in his lifetime by the end of the film. One of the lines that runs through the whole film is, just because I am a beast, does that not mean that I'm allowed to live? And Keanu Reeves is kind of saying, in Oldboy, which is earlier in the 2000s, you know, it's putting a huge emphasis on the fault, I guess you could say, the fault of the little guy, the fault of the individual, which probably isn't a very controversial theme in 2003, you know, during Bush and neoliberalism, putting the fault on the individuals, not that controversial. Moving on through the 2014, by contrast, John Wick, it sort of cuts this individual some slack a little bit and sort of puts, and not to say that he hasn't had any bad misdeeds, but it puts a lot more weight on his justifications for revenge, his right to revenge. How does it do this? Well, it does still give an aspect of misdeeds, right? It sort of says, you know, he is an ex-hitman, for goodness sake. But being a hitman's a little bit different to hurting your old school friend. Like, being a hitman, you're probably killing bad guys. You're potentially making the world a better place. Hitmen are sometimes good guys in movies. But more than that is that there's this aura of innocence in John Wick's life, right? Well, for starters, he has a dead wife who died of cancer. So he is at no fault there. He had a loving wife. He was a loving husband. And cancer is, you know, very often a symbol of, you know, no fault death. It's no one's fault when they get cancer. It's not even explained. It's not like she smoked too much or he ate too much bad food. Like, she just gets it. So it's almost two-dimensionally innocent. And then her legacy lives on in this the cutest puppy ever. I think it's a Cavalier King Charles or a beagle or something like that. And which is, a puppy is, like, you can't deny, one of the clearest symbols of innocence. And when it dies, there's a very clear symbol of innocence lost, almost in a sort of, almost like a parody level, clearly, like the metaphor is so clear, it's almost a parody. And so when John Wick goes after all these things, after these bad guys, we can't help but barrack for him, because he's fighting for innocence. He's fighting in the name of innocence. He's not fighting out of some kind of personal vendetta as such, even though that is what he's doing. It's less of a revenge tragedy, this film. The tragedy is sort of felt at the beginning of the film rather than felt through the act of revenge itself. So in 2014, this piece of cinema is not necessarily pushing us to focus on the impact or the aftermath of our own misdeeds so much, but it's indulging the kind of inner rage we feel in avenging the loss of innocence. So it's sort of saying that, no, you do have something to fight for. Don't look at yourself. Don't look at the things you did in the past. You have a right to forget the bad things you did in the past. Look at the innocence that have been, look at the innocent things that have been taken from you, or the innocence that's been lost in the world. That's what should be your motivation. Very different depiction to Oldboy. And has cinema gone further than that in later films? Has it taken that idea further and put more of an emphasis on avenging the innocent and stripping away its depictions of what's at fault, how the individuals fault themselves? Well, let's move on to our third and final film for today's conversation, and this would be Dev Patel's debut feature, Monkey Man, from this year. And I, as I said before, I loved this movie so much. I'm not going to have enough time to go through all the aspects of the film. And you got to say, look, I just spent 2 minutes talking about Joel Wink. I'm not an action film guy. Fans of the show know I do often talk about action films because they often have very clear symbolism. You know, I enjoyed watching Predator a couple of weeks ago. I have to say that I was so into this film for every frame of it. I loved it so much. And not just because it was, the craft was there. I'll talk about it in a moment. But the way, I think it's just a textbook example of how you integrate craft into substance. So it's not just that it was done, you know, it's shot well, as you know, all those sort of things. Those decisions mirror and parallel everything that's happening thematically in the film as well. And I'm going to do my best to sort of talk about it in that way and lift some of that stuff up before the end of the show. But if you haven't seen it yet, Dev Patel is also the star of the film. There's a bit of a Matt Damon, Good Will Hunting aspect of the film, I will say, but he's this nameless man at the beginning of this film who goes on this enraged path of revenge in this, I think it's a fictitious contemporary Indian city, but it looks very Indian, and it could be Mumbai or where. I've actually been in it myself, but I didn't even realize it was a fictitious city till I was researching this week. And I want to talk about it. It is the third and final film for today's conversation. How it kind of depicts this surprising, or not necessarily apparent, interconnectedness between the little guy and the big guy. And one of the key clear ways it does is how it subverts its setting. So the film, as I said, is set in India. And when we think about a place like India, it might be, of all the places in the world, the place where a person probably feels the most small in a very, very profound sense. So first of all, it's a hugely populated country. I'm pretty sure India is the most populated country now. I think it's overtaken China, or it's about to. You feel small in that sense, in that you're one person amongst literally a billion. But also it's a very impoverished country. So a huge majority of people that live in India, a huge population of people that live in India, not only one in a billion, but they are also very poor. And so when we talk about feeling very small, I guess small could also be a synonym for powerlessness. You have a small degree of power, a small degree of influence. And you could look at this film as a really brilliant, you know, look past the socioeconomic aspects of it and see it as a very brilliant metaphor for the existential condition, which is to say that, you know, I think all these films do have an existential bent to them. That's not the focus, but I think you can read them that way, which is that if you want to look past the socioeconomic elements of it, it is a depiction of how to be, you know, how to be, how it feels to be so small in a very vast universe that is essentially indifferent to you, and you feel powerlessness in terms of changing it. And I myself, like I haven't, as I said before, I haven't been to India myself, but I have traveled in other very hugely populated developing countries in the world. I've been to China, I've been to rural Indonesia, and I have felt that, and I wonder if you, dear listener, have had this experience as well, where you have a kind of existential moment when you're in those places, especially in rural areas, where you're like, what is it like to actually live here every day of your life, where there's no reasonably foreseeable way of seeing how you could have any significant power in the world? Like, you're not going to school, you're not going to be able to go get a, you know, good degree or make any serious money or become famous or influential politically. Like it's a quite an existential moment. You're like, this is your life. You live out in the sticks in an impoverished country. Like, there's an existential feeling about that. Yet the film manages to subvert that sense of powerlessness. How does it do that? Well, I think that Patel does such a great job. It's almost kind of miraculous in how his character is able to kind of climb out of this state of powerlessness and smallness in a way that it does kind of seem not realistic, but like we follow what's happening. We see the journey of the character move upwardly in a way that is reasonable within the sort of laws of the film. And probably the more important point to make about that is that it's quite enthralling and adrenaline inducing as he does it as well. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in a second. And that is aided by very brilliant direction. It's very snappy and it is very well edited and it's very well cut, and the way that the sound works and everything and matches with the zooming of bikes and the odometer and all that sort of stuff. They're very, very clinical action directing and editing. We have a sense of an adrenaline push. I'm going to get into this in a little bit more in a second, a little bit later in the show, but I think you empathize very clearly, very deeply with this character, that it almost becomes more believable because you want it to be believable. When the adrenaline charge is like, yes, take that next step. It doesn't feel like a superhero movie as such, even though, you know, this is a sort of a vigilante element to it, this film. It doesn't have that kind of supernatural superpower feel to it. You have that same feeling, you you have when you have a high sense of adrenaline in a footy game or something like that. You feel like you suddenly can do more than you're capable of. It's a very stoic idea. And you watch enough motivational videos on YouTube, you sort of get that feeling that you are capable of things that you have no reason to, you know, that kind of delusion that successful people talk about they had. And I think I'm in sort of saying all that, I am putting a little bit of emphasis on the story writing about how he's able to sort of become upwardly mobile through sort of a series of choices that the character in the world makes. The direction of this film needs to be talked about as well, and just this, the general set, like the set pieces of the film. So it's almost like Slumdog Millionaire meets like the French Dispatch, like another Wes Anderson Dollhouse film, where like there's all these interconnected moving parts in this sort of Indian city, and there's a great sequence where there's like they steal a purse, this community, and it sort of depicts this community's long interconnected organism where the purse goes like through all these different, like up these alleyways. And it's been done before in films, but like it's done very well in this one. And when we start to see this community in the film depicted this way, it actually starts to make sense to us as viewers, or it did for me, that, well, these people are actually interconnected. They are small individually, but they are interconnected. And there's a huge motif in this film about community solidarity. And, you know, one person on their own is very small, but a whole bunch of people together can mobilize, can organize, can create a huge movement. And there's this motif of one ember can start a fire, and that's on the movie poster and everything. But you definitely feel that when you watch the film, that because even though, you know, these individual characters and the little kids and so they are physically small, it doesn't really matter. As long as a strong sense of interconnectedness is there, unless it's there's a glue that holds all those people together, you know, coupled with the adrenaline of the film, coupled with what we see this character being put through and doing, you start to see how that fire could be lit and how it's almost like a tinderbox ready to explode. I should, though, mention as well the story itself and the writing of the film, because I think that's also worth talking about or returning to as well, because there's a really important point I want to make about this film. The beginning third of this film, like the first act of this film, is so dependent on just your sheer human intuition. And I was really just like, I was just so impressed as I was watching the film. It was like how, like I couldn't write down on paper what was actually happening. Like you don't even know the name of the protagonist or like what he does or what his deal is or why he's so angry. But you cannot help but feel what is going on. And it's sort of very hard to describe sort of how that felt, but like viscerally during watching the film, there was such a weird mix of not having any idea what's going on, but feeling knowing what's going on, not wanting to know. It was almost like it was a mystery film for like a Agatha Christie film or something at the beginning, where there's what's, you're so enticed into wanting to know what happens, not because it's a failure of the exposition of the film, but because there's such an emphasis on human connection there, on human empathy, on being able to look at his face and what he's doing and his experience and the way he looks in a mirror, to then sort of, that's the reason why you're hooked into the film, because you connect on a human level rather than understanding what his specific issue is. And so we're talking about sort of the interconnectedness between the little guy and the big guy. The film does evoke a deep sense of empathy through filmmaking. Like it's able to, like all good art's able to do, it's able to communicate a sense of understanding, communicate a sense of empathy without saying anything, without actual communication or words on a piece of paper that communicates it. So it's definitely lifting up, or it reminds us of that, our potential to understand someone without knowing what they're saying or what they believe. So how does this differ to the other films? Well, we started with Old Boy, which kind of, it's almost like a huge guilt trip on forgetting our past misdeeds. It's kind of like saying, you know, there's always something you've done in the past that might be the source of why you feel like you need to avenge yourself. But then in John Wick, we are still acknowledging sort of past misdeeds, but kind of leveraging our capacity for forgiveness a little bit. The film sort of leverages that capacity for forgiveness and exploits this yearning, this inherent yearning we all have to avenge the innocent. But then in Monkey Man, it goes even further. So, I think it essentially depicts a little man who is kind of as purely a victim of injustice as possible. Nothing, he really doesn't do anything wrong. He's almost like a purely victimized character. And that's what fuels him to thrust forward. So, and I want to sort of say that this is one of the crucial points about this film, is that the way it's able to do that is so much, how it's able to do that is so much aided by the excess, the depiction of excess of the big guy, right? Which is so well mirrored, and this is going to sound very pretentious, but it is true if you've seen the film. There's so much excessive violence in this film, right? But you have to have it that excessive because you have to depict how much inequality, the scale of the inequality in this society. So as he works his way up the ladder, it can't just be like the same level fight. The big fights at the end have to be grossly disgusting because the inequality itself is that gross, right? And I don't mean gross in the, I mean gross in like, you know, gross domestic profit. Like it's so vast that you have to have vast violence to mirror and to parallel it. And if you know your history, and if you know your history of war, that's kind of a truth of human societies, that to overcome a huge inequality, you need a huge amount of violence and revolution. So where are films going in this era for now? Will the next sort of vengeful Street Fighter film, will it feel like we've maybe gone too far? Is it going to be that, you know, are we going to be able to escape this idea of the pure victim? Is it going to be a point where we say, well, actually, you know, everyone does have a little baggage. Maybe we need to rediscover the misdeeds of even the lowest victim in society. Maybe there isn't such a thing as a pure victim. Although that does sort of get the adrenaline charging and does invite us to do really... And I can kind of see why this film is being delayed in India in a weird way, because like I can see someone watching this and be like, I'm just going to go out there and go. And I was like, that's such a... like the film really does give you this sense of like you really can do anything no matter how small you are. And I can't help but think that in the next few years when we return to this genre, we can't help but say, well, we have to look a little bit further at these characters. Maybe there is something. Maybe you need to leverage that inner misdeed that one might have. Who knows where it's going. But regardless, if we can look at some, like a through line that runs through all of these films, there does seem to be something inherent in all of us. We get kind of, we just sweat a lot, but we get some kind of charge of adrenaline in seeing a singular man or a singular person. So we feel this sense of motivation. There's a very profound sense of adrenaline running through us when we see a single man kind of beaten up and disposed of by society, but then who reaches into the depths of what's left inside him to rise up against what seems to be a very common kind of depiction of the villain in all these films, which is this very elite, suited up, archetypally selfish, and always got like a kind of corporate vibe to them, which I think is saying something. This is sort of a universal opposition to that kind of figure. And it doesn't matter whether there is a degree of fault on the part of the individual. We do like to see them fight back to some degree. We can recognize that in ourselves. So perhaps there's something kind of eternally satisfying about seeing the top and bottom society battling it out. Not just battling it out, but battling it out on the even surface of the street. Thanks so much for joining us this week on Sacred Cinema. I've been your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, here on 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. Stay tuned for more quality radio programming here on 2XX, and jump onto our website to consider subscribing to the station or sponsoring any of our shows. Until next week, thank you so much for tuning in and joining us, and contact me at contact@jimmybernasconi.com. But until next week, we'll see you again then. Cheers.